every time we left the hospital and someone was being wheeled out with their baby in their lap and their balloons and their flowers, I wanted to punch them in the face. Mm-hmm. I would see a woman who was like fully pregnant complaining that like their ankles were swollen. I'd be like, just walk away. Like, you got to walk away.
I remember very, very so clearly, we were leaving the hospital and a lady said, my baby wouldn't stop crying. And I'm just so tired. And Carrie looked at me as tears started to ball up in her eyes and said, I would kill just to hear my baby cry.
This is Motherhood Sessions. I'm Dr. Alexandra Sachs. Today, I'm talking to a couple named Carrie and Jay, who have asked us to use their real names. Their daughter Charlie and son Teddy were born at 23 weeks, the very edge of viability. The whole family spent about 6 months in the NICU, or neonatal intensive care unit. Miraculously, the twins survived and are now 4 years old. But this severe prematurity has had a lasting impact on the kids, who are still dealing with medical complications. It's also had a lasting impact on Carrie and Jay, who are working through their trauma, but in different ways. So I asked them to come in together to talk about it.
So I was 23 weeks and 5 days. Mm. I was working full time. I went into the office. My entire pregnancy was uneventful. I was high risk because of my age. I'm considered a geriatric pregnancy.
How old were you when you were pregnant?
39. Mm-hmm. And because I was having twins. Mm-hmm. So it puts you into a high risk. I was mm-hmm. with a high risk doctor. But
so then what happened at 23?
We don't know. So I was in the office. I was working full time. I was sitting at my desk and I started to feel weird pains. So I stood up, figured maybe the babies were a little compressed or whatever, needed more space. So I stood up and I was still feeling pain. It was basically every 5 minutes and really like a clock. And I called my doctor and I said, I'm having some pain. And they said, you need to come to labor and delivery. And I just walked out and left. I didn't tell anyone where I was going.
Yeah.
I got in a cab. I called Jay.
Yeah.
I was crying to him saying, they want me to go to labor and delivery. It's too early. It's too early. I got to labor and delivery. They brought me into a triage room. They started evaluating. Water hadn't broken. I wasn't dilated. Heartbeats looked good. Then they brought in the NICU team. And at that point, they did an internal to check my cervix. I was beginning to dilate. My son was born first. He was 1 pound, 10 ounces. Then my daughter was born. She was 1 pound, 4 ounces. So, I mean, basically less than an iPhone. Both immediately intubated. And I just remember, you know, there was a team on me and then teams on the babies. I didn't see the babies. They were taken and then they finished up on me. And I don't
think that's why when I saw her, because they were still working on her when I came in. Mm. And that's why when she looked at me, she said, go see them.
Yeah.
Before I walked into that intensive care unit, a doctor stopped me and said, Mr. Walker, I want you to know that you've got a 5% chance on getting out of here, let alone a 5% chance just for the next hour.
What did he mean by 5% chance of getting out of here?
Of survival for the children. And that's all I was given. And I was like, okay, fine. And I'm suddenly put in front of these...
Broken birds.
Yeah. Broken birds. Like. That's how they looked.
I mean, like a baby just
a
had like a
newborn. Do you know how an image of a bird that has just come out of the shell, they look wet and scrawny and they can't protect themselves.
Yeah.
That's how they looked.
Yeah.
And for the one time in my life, in my entire life, I felt helpless. I kind of, my background is complicated just due to a very lengthy time in the military. And it was an area that you just kind of learn as you go and grow as an adult and do the best that you can in difficult situations.
Yeah.
To then being thrown into the NICU, where suddenly the tools of what you're given are taken away.
Like what?
I knew how to protect people and places via aggression and weapons. I knew how to protect via intimidation and teamwork.
Mm.
In the NICU, that's all taken away from you.
Yeah.
And then I remember very well, Carrie seeing them for the first time, in a wheelchair, in a bassinet. She couldn't even touch them. Mm. It was heartbreaking. It was really heartbreaking. And even at that point, I don't think it really hit me. And I don't actually think it hit both of us until maybe about a week later. An actual week later, where we actually started to figure out, okay, we're here for the long haul. And this is going to be really difficult.
Yeah. We attended rounds every day. We were both working.
You had to go to work during the day?
My choice. I went back to the office.
We would see parents staying there all day long. Mm-hmm. You know? Well, we did that.
Mm-hmm.
And we rapidly learned it's draining.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, really, for some odd reason, you're physically drained due to the mental perspective.
It goes back to what you said before, because there's nothing you can do in that environment.
Exactly.
And I think the hardest thing about that environment is they're both intubated. You're constantly watching what is a pulse ox monitor.
Mm-hmm.
Now, people need to be 90 and above. 80, you know, 80s are worrying. 70s even more so.
Yeah.
60s, 50s, you're turning colors. There was a point in time where Charlie went into the teens, and I remember seeing a 17, and it was a ghastly white, like
almost grayish.
Gray. It was a horrific look of what a dead baby would look like. And they needed to, she had extubated her. So basically, tube came out. So you've got a team running. I mean, 10, 12 people
mm-hmm.
coming in, trying to save this baby, and mom being whisked out.
Your mom.
Yeah. Just, you know, the team mm-hmm. gets around the baby and mm-hmm. someone's there to put, you know, and we don't want you to see this.
You were pushed aside.
Pushed aside, taken out of the room. We can't, mm-hmm. we don't want you to see this.
Mm-hmm.
And you're outside the room just breaking down. And I think the other thing that's hard to understand is, and it was always a hard thing when I heard other people talk about it, like the way you fall in love with your baby the first time you meet them, and how do you have so much love and so much worry and so much, you don't even know this thing.
Yeah.
And it's the moment when you realize the absolute scariest thing they have over you. And it's you know, when I say to parents now, I'm like, nobody, like everyone talks about parenthood and nobody tells you about the panic and the worry.
Yeah. Did you feel angry? I mean, you talked.
Not towards other NICU parents. Anger?
Yeah.
Every pregnant woman I saw. And every time we left the hospital and someone was being wheeled out with their baby in their lap and their balloons and their flowers. I wanted to punch them in the face.
Mm-hmm.
I would see a woman who was like fully pregnant complaining that like their ankles were swollen. I'd be like, just walk away. Like, you got to walk away.
I remember very, very so clearly we were leaving the hospital and a lady said, my baby wouldn't stop crying. and I'm just so tired. And Carrie looked at me as tears started to ball up in her eyes and said, I would kill just to hear my baby cry.
So we didn't hear them cry until they were three or four months?
Yeah.
The first time we heard them cry, it was like, hallelujah. Like, please wake me up at night with that. Like, I wait for the day. I mean, it was, you know, when I would hear people complain about like, oh, my baby's got a 102 fever. Okay. Talk to me when it's 105.6.
Yeah.
So it was like that kind of stuff that would bother me.
What makes you angry today?
For me, I'm still mad. I'm mad that we had to find that regiment. Sorry.
No.
It isn't fair, and I know life isn't fair. Why should a couple that is in love and wanting this entrance of this new life into this world be put into a position like that? That's why I'm mad.
Yeah.
I take a look at these other parents and I take a look at, you know, their bonds, and I get that every child is different and every life is different and ours is different than anyone else's.
Yeah.
But I'm disappointed that we had to be introduced to this experience in this manner.
Welcome back to the show. Carrie and Jay's twins are now four, but their medical problems didn't end when they left the hospital. Their parents still worry about their safety.
I still don't think they're in the clear. I don't. I still don't think they're in the clear. We have breathing problems with our daughter. That is very worrisome and keeps me up at night still.
Yeah.
Our son has developmental issues.
Yeah.
That keep me up at night.
Yeah.
This last weekend, Charlie went into the hospital.
Mm.
Charlie went back onto oxygen support. So I, once again, I'm seeing things permanently around her.
Yeah.
And I'm up at the screen following the numbers. And you're automatically just sucked right back into it.
Yeah.
I'm very worried about our children from a health perspective. The other week when I was up in New Hampshire, Teddy fell, mm-hmm. got a huge egg on his head.
Mm-hmm.
I had so many eggs in my head as a kid, I'm fine.
Yeah.
Where is that line? And it was like, do we go to the hospital? Do we not? So you think, due to our past experiences, are we letting them grow?
Yeah.
Or are we being that helicopter parent?
Yeah.
And where is that line?
Yeah.
And I'm upset because that's so blurred with us.
Yeah. And it's not, I think it may be in anger inducing because it maybe there isn't an answer even. Because it's like if there are things about the kid's medical situation that are in flux, then no one can say for sure this means that.
I just want to have that cloud go away. I don't want to have that hovering around me.
You don't want to be attached to that story forever.
Yes. That stigma, whatever you want to call it.
So what's it like for you to hear his worry? Because does it feel the same for you?
A little bit different, I think. You know, I worry for what their future means. You know, Teddy with vision, he won't be able to drive. And, you know, I went to the doctor right before Teddy's surgery last summer. I'm like, you know, what does this mean for him? Will he be able to drive? And the doctor goes, he's 3 and a half. let's get to grade school.
Yeah.
Let's, like, that's not right now.
Yeah.
And, like, when he's ready to drive.
We'll deal with that.
Like, let's think about
see
that.
What world
so, like,
we live in.
I think about kind of the life that they'll be able to live and whether or not we're getting them to a place where they're going to be successful and they're going to be happy.
Yeah. And it sounds like, Jay, that's what you're wrestling with, too. You know, how do I let them go wander into the backyard without worrying about them falling?
I would have no problems whatsoever sending them into the backyard and letting them fall and get bumps on the head and scrapes on the knees. If I knew that if a medical situation came up, that they could be treated like any other normal child.
Yeah.
But they can't.
Right.
Our daughter still has the size of an airway of a newborn.
Yeah.
So I can't even let myself have the privilege of letting them do that.
Right. I mean, I don't think you can, and I don't think you should be expect of yourself, but I don't think you can have the threshold of kind of letting them go off and wander. I just don't think you have that privilege. I think...
And that makes me mad.
Yeah. And that's real.
We don't have that privilege.
Yeah. So I guess how do you let go of anger or deal with anger? How do you accept those terms that you don't have that privilege, you may never have that privilege?
We accept them differently. Mm. Totally differently. I've got my way of dealing with it. Carrie has her ways.
What's your way?
I am a control freak. My former life, I needed to control everything down to the second for it to be successful.
Yeah.
Like, down to the second. So now I come into, as I'm starting to separate my military life to civilian life.
Got it.
Number one, I don't have the responsibilities that I used to have. I'm not wearing that uniform that I used to have.
Yeah.
I'm not in control.
Yeah.
And so with the things that I am able to control, it's almost like I'm trying to almost like over control it.
Yeah. And Carrie,
that bothers me.
How do you do it?
I think I compartmentalize. Mm. You know, when I was in the NICU, it was, that's my belly. I wasn't supposed to meet them yet.
Right.
When it was not being able to breastfeed, it was like, at least they're getting my milk. Because they, you know, we were still feeding them the milk. But, and then I think just trying not to focus on it. And it's when I get brought, like, I don't want to say when I get forced to focus on it, is when I get stuck in it and get upset. If it's a show, if it's being reminded of something, if it's seeing some of the pictures, if it's hearing someone else's story, you know, it's tough to deal with it in the moment.
You get
and I
triggered.
Think that I, yeah.
What like happens?
I mean, sometimes I'll just start crying. Mm-hmm. And then I'll kind of try to brush myself off and pick up and move on.
Yeah.
But it's like those things waiting for that to stop happening.
But do you feel like you can accept, it's okay to say, yep, we're here, and it may be something we deal with our whole lives? Does that feel okay, or does it feel like something that you want to?
I'm going to quickly answer because I'm eager to hear hers. Do I know we're in that situation? Yes. Do I have to accept and like it? No, nor have I. And I don't know if I will.
My sense from Carrie is that, am I right? That you do feel more okay accepting that?
I think that I feel like I'm it's just our story.
It's your story.
Yeah. I'd like to deal with it better. But I kind of feel like this is just who we are.
Yeah. I mean, Jay, do you think that you feel like there's something that you want to, it speaks to the sort of a little bit of the shame piece? Like,
I don't want Carrie to have that soldier story. I don't want Carrie to have.
I'm not talking about Carrie. I'm talking about you.
Right. Part of who I am is to protect her from that. And I wasn't able to. So I feel like in many ways I failed.
But she doesn't feel that way.
No. No. Well, I don't want to speak for you.
That you failed? No, because, I mean, for me, my body failed. You know, it's, for me, it's, and it's interesting because people have different views on, you know, people always say to me, well, do you know what happened? Do you know why the, you know, why you went into labor? I go, no, I don't. And I don't know that it wasn't my fault, but I don't know.
How could it have been your fault?
I don't know. Like, that's the thing. Like, maybe
you followed
I should,
instructions.
Maybe I shouldn't have gone on the plane, you know, the month, you know,
you weren't
within
told
the
not
weeks.
To.
But I was, you know, like, I don't know. Because I don't know what went wrong, I don't know what would have prevented it. And if someone said to me, I know what went wrong and what you could have done, I wouldn't want to know. Like, I'm not having more children, so there's no reason for me to find out why my body failed.
Right.
Something that bothered me when Carrie saw my sister for the first time mm-hmm. after the children were born. The first thing out of Carrie's mouth was, I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. Ugh. That hurt. Mm-hmm. That hurt. Why should you have to say sorry? I think about that a lot. And I love you so much.
It's hard. I mean, it's, you know, it was a huge... It's a huge traumatic thing for our whole family.
Yeah.
For my parents and it was a very traumatic thing for all of us. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, there is a certain responsibility that I felt around that because it was my job to bring mm-hmm. them into the world healthy.
Right. And Jay, you feel the responsibility to just protect your family at baseline, and so this is a little bit shameful for you,
yeah,
I think,
right.
In that this is over your head.
Yes, ma'am.
And I actually think you've both done a beautiful job working through that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And in supporting each other and helping each other work through it. But I think
the first compliment we've ever gotten.
Here?
No,
in general, that actually kind of touch me. Thank you.
I mean it. You're very resilient people. But where I think you really have grown through that, and I think the next area of work for you is on working through the shame that, you know, this remains the medical responsibility of taking care of your children and being aware that there will be more things to come. We don't know what they'll be, you know, that we can't get rid of that, and to work on trying to face, I think, the shame that you're both feeling about that in different ways, as if you could do something more, you could maybe, like you said, get rid of that cloud, but you can't. You can't do anything more to get rid of that cloud. This is not in your control. And it's okay for that to make you feel angry too. But I think that it's just the beating yourself up piece that's the next stage of work for both of you in different ways.
I think that's normal, though.
What do you mean?
I think it's very natural to be your own worst critic.
Yes, but what's not normal is to have to cope with such extraordinary levels of trauma and responsibility. And I think that when you have to go through life dealing with what you guys have to deal with, you have to find a way to be unusually gentle with yourselves because life is really beating you up. And I think, you know, the way people beat themselves up every day burns the average person out. And I think the average person would benefit by letting go of some of that too. But I really don't think you guys can afford it. I think you have to save your energy for the things outside of
yeah.
what you did, what's wrong with you. You know, I don't think you can afford to use your energy beating up on yourselves? Because like, I think for you, like, beating yourself up or talking to yourself about what you're going to do next is, even when it's hypercritical, it does make you feel more in control. Mm-hmm. And forgiving yourself is a certain letting go.
Yeah, no. And do you know what? That was something that I don't know if this is random or not, but part of the experience of going through that NICU, I do feel lucky. Yeah. For several reasons. And I feel that the kids were lucky and we were lucky for the situation that we were in and how it was managed and how we survived it. I think we're very lucky.
Yeah, but it's not random. I mean, you're lucky and you're really resilient and you have a really good relationship.
Yeah.
You work hard at it.
That luck wasn't luck. That was work that came from that. But I feel proud to say that my children got the emotional support and the medical support in that time that they needed.
Yeah. Totally. No, you guys have done amazing because you're an amazing family.
Motherhood Sessions is a production of Gimlet Media. It's produced by Peter Bresnan, Molly Donahue, and Lauren Silverman. Our editors are Devin Taylor and Nazanin Rafsanjani. Music and mixing by Emma Munger. There will be a brand new episode of Motherhood Sessions next week.
I have two embryos left, and they're like the debate. How long do we keep them? What should we do with them? Do we get a surrogate? Do I even want a baby? I don't even know if I want a baby.